This is Fuel.
Fuel for thought.
Fuel injected.
Fuel for your business.
Jet Fuel.
Welcome to Fuel, the new business podcast for the UK business development community, brought to you in association with The Advertist, business development tools and insight for creative marketing and communications agencies. And I'm your host, a Smith called Keith. Now, when we first launched The Advertist, our mission was to help everyone working in business development and agency sales feel more equipped by providing them with a single source of research and insight to help them engage prospects more easily. Little did we know that our service would become even more vital when the economy flipped on its head in a matter of weeks. Find all the information you need to make the job of finding new clients so much easier with The Advertist. Every day you'll get news, insight, facts, figures, people moves, tenders, lists and mergers and acquisitions, crowdfunding and venture capital updates. There's no better way to power your new business. The Advertist gets you to the door, all you have to do is push through it. Visit The Advertist at www.theadvertist.com, that's theadvertist.com, for a free trial or call the team on 0203 356 3717 today. Now, this week's show is a must listen to if you've already encountered issues with dealing with new clients remotely. We've got a great interview and a handy guide to everything you wanted to know about remote account winning and management. But before we do, here's Jeremy Davis to offer some insight on what to do if one of your prospects is a supermarket.
One of the less remarked upon aspects of life in the current crisis is the re-evaluation and rehabilitation of the supermarkets. With other retail outlets forced to close, their distribution and delivery clout has made them crucial to the challenge of feeding people under lockdown and supplying enough bananas to satisfy families' hunger. For photos of their children making banana bread, which they can put on social media to ensure everyone knows they aren't just sitting in front of the TV all the time, but are using this strange period to learn wholesome, valuable life skills. Once the local artisanal stores reopen, of course, they'll probably be back to being seen as the big bully boys, squeezing supplies and fleecing customers at the same time. New business folk are familiar with this dual perception issue, as anyone who's ever bought a big retail project or account into an agency knows. You become both the darling of the finance team and the scourge of the creatives. It's not clever, it's not sexy, but darn, it's lucrative. Now, suffice it to say, I've worked in more than one agency with a big retail client that was simultaneously responsible for paying everybody's salaries and making their lives a little bit less joyful. From a new biz perspective, retailer own brand is the one everybody loves to hate, like the England rugby team or Steve Davis. Dominant, powerful, but not very stylish. Prospecting for own brand is also a bit of a nightmare. How can you come up with that nugget of insight into the target audience when the target audience is literally everyone? And with every retailer from Tesco to your local corner shop using such sophisticated CRM software that they know more about shoppers than they know themselves, what can we possibly tell them about their customers that they don't already know? Sometimes, however, even the most ruthlessly customer-centric retailer can make a misstep. And if there's one product that exemplifies this for me, it's from the designer's favourite supermarket, Waitrose, who broke all the rules and stuck two fingers up at everybody by launching a value range, Waitrose Essentials, that not only won frigging design awards, but also cost more than most of the brands on the shelf. But then they pushed the joke a little bit too far, even for someone like me, when they launched Waitrose Essential Chicken Kiev. Now, just how decadent must a society have become that chicken Kiev is regarded as in any way essential to the well-being of the general populace, unless you absolutely have to host a dinner party in the 1970s? There were no chicken Kiev lines forming in the streets in the darkest days of the former Soviet Union, even in Kiev. You never see the UN dropping chicken Kiev parcels on the starving masses. Really, Waitrose, you can do better than that. It's high time they got with the times and launched the ultimate convenience food for the social media age, Waitrose Essential Banana Bread.
I think we've actually ended up with a better product on the back of it, and something that's quite differentiated. So we've actually, you know, we've done a few of these now, and one of our new clients recently said that we did a business objectives workshop, and she said it was one of the most beneficial, enjoyable she'd attended pre or post lockdown. So it sort of shows you can collaborate and do something just as effective remotely if you plan it out and you put your mind to it.
Not so long ago, we took for granted the ability to socialise, chit-chat and collaborate with colleagues in the same building. But that's all changed now, and we've been forced into wide area networking. So what's the perfect protocol for pitching in a pandemic? The rulebook for pitching has been completely torn up, thrown out and set alight in the last 6 months. We've explored some of the issues surrounding the new laws of attraction in previous shows, but this one is going to help you put some structure into the process of onboarding clients. Andy Farmer is a good friend of mine, and I have a huge amount of respect for him because he's got a brain the size of a planet. For all the years I've known him, he's been one of the most knowledgeable people I know when it comes to strategy and client relationships. This week, we look at how his agency, ORM, has refined new processes for working remotely, and Andy has come up with a very handy list of pros and cons for winning and onboarding clients in the virtual world. So grab a notebook and some coffee and sit back and prepare to put some polish on your pitch. Now, if I had a pound note for every time I read a news article about remote working, I'd be a few thousand pounds richer over the last 6 months. And with the latest news that our most recent efforts to stamp out COVID-19 by kind of confusing it into submission with a rich and varied set of rules has failed, we're all now facing extra jail time. But I mean quality time at home with our loved ones. And so it is. We're all looking at another few months of living in a box on our colleagues' and clients' computer screens. But as people in shows say, the show must go on. So in the agency world, we need to become even more skilled in the art of doing business via video call. How do you get your point across without physically being there? The whole process of pre-pitch discovery and the like has morphed. So what changes can we make to remain effective? Now, if you haven't already become adept at conducting relationships on Zoom or Teams or Skype or some such, then you need to pay attention to this show. Because even in lockdown, I could lean out of a window and throw a stone in any direction and hit a dozen people who are ready to hand out advice on how to do business remotely. But only a few would be worth listening to. Now, unfortunately, I can't throw a stone 3,980 miles, because that's what it's going to take to hit Andy Farmer. For it is he who has some gems of information on how to effectively remotely onboard clients by outlining some simple do's and don'ts of virtual pitching. His agency, or rather the agency he provides executive strategy for, ORM, is already demonstrating how it's done. They've won a string of virtual pitches, provided sound strategic wisdom for dozens more, and have taken to the virtual world like a digital duck to wired water. Do you like that?
Marvellous.
So without further ado, here's Andy Farmer. Welcome, Andy.
Hey, how you doing, Keith? You all right?
Yes, I'm very well. Thanks for agreeing to help us out here. All well in your neck of the woods, family-wise, and everybody doing okay?
Yes, I'm good. I'm sort of 6 months in plus to remote working, and I have to say I'm not really missing the commute, but I am missing some face-to-face collaboration with colleagues in the office. So I've been to London probably twice in 6 months.
And how is London now? Is it just a sort of heating back up, or is it still kind of quite bare?
It's busier than it was the first time I went in, definitely, but it's still a lot quieter, and with the rule of six now, I think it's going to quieten up a bit more.
That's what I said at the start about trying to confuse this COVID. You know, it's sort of the rules keep changing, and you know, it makes it quite difficult for everybody to sort of find out what the latest rules actually are. But I mean, what do you make of the latest news, the sort of rule of six? I mean, what do you think this is going to mean for agencies like yours?
Well, I think, to be honest, it hasn't really affected our response. We've had sort of several management meetings about it, but you know, the office was always going to open for those who wanted to go back there from October, but we've never been in a position where we're going to force people to do that. And actually, we've done various surveys and consulted with teams, and the demand's pretty low. So, you know, since
for people April, to go back into the office.
Yeah. So pretty much since April, we've moved into this remote first model, which I think, to be honest, most agencies have. And in general, it's been working quite well. So it's probably likely to stay that way for the next 6 months.
And how many people are you?
Well, I mean, we're co-located in several offices, but we're probably around about, between the different offices, about 120 people.
Okay, so all right.
Yeah. So I'd say, yeah, we'll probably move long-term to a hybrid model where you probably have smaller on-demand offices, so you can have meetings and co-create, but by default, you might only be in the office, you know, one or two times a week. But I think the bigger issue for COVID, really, as you alluded to earlier on, was you know, that sort of new business prospecting and networking in the remote world. I think, you know, it's more transactional, and I know there's virtual conferences and webinars, but that's not quite the same as a coffee or a beer with a prospect off the record.
Yeah, sure. And I mean, it does mean a sort of a change. I think sitting at a virtual desk having a beer with a client who's having a beer the other end just doesn't just doesn't have the same meaning, does it?
No, it's not quite the same. No.
Plus, you have to keep buying your own round.
Yeah, it's not cheap. Well, I guess it depends how many you buy for the client, but there you go.
So, I mean, Orm describes itself as an agency that helps its clients achieve digital freedom. I mean, you know, what does that mean?
Well, okay, so who are ORM and what do we do at very high level? I guess, that's digital freedom. It's all about us helping our clients to do better business with their customers, whether they're internal customers or external customers or both. And we do that through visioning and building digital products and platforms or portals and services. And doing better business means these products reduce customer pain points and increase engagement with those brands. They increase brand perception and usage or transactions. Or it may be that we help those clients improve their operational efficiency and how their internal teams manage the client relationship. So in the end, it's all about driving outcomes that give our clients competitive advantage over the long term. So we very much see this as a partnership. So several of our clients, we've been, you know, working with them for a number of years.
And you couldn't really have come, it sort of pretty much played into your strengths, doesn't it, really? I mean, what's been going on, really, in terms of the advice that you're sort of giving out and the strategies that you're recommending? I mean, this is what everybody should be doing now.
Well, yeah, it's certainly precipitated it, because in essence, we're saying, how do you use digital to get competitive advantage, both in customer experience, operational efficiency? Well, in a post-COVID world, everyone's moved to digital to do
sure.
that. So in theory, it's should be a no-brainer, really.
Yes, exactly. Well, yeah. I mean, I, as you've said, and as I said that you said, but winning the actual business itself and having relationships with prospects sort of in this lockdown, you know, has made the sort of sales job a lot harder. And, you know, I wanted to try and kind of get your feedback on things, if we can kind of look at the sort of process of it, because sure. I think, you know, the advice that you could give would really help people. So let's look at the positive side of it first. What are the advantages of doing business remotely?
Okay, so there's a few, but I'd probably high level say let's stick with three at the moment.
Okay.
I think one is speed of delivery. I think if you're working remote, you've got more focus on the project internally and with the client as well, and less distraction, because when you're having those Zoom meetings and interactions, you're not getting distracted by the things, unless everyone's got their video turned off and is doing other work, which hopefully they're not. The second is improved governance. And I think there's a much more increased focus on, when you're working remote, to dot the I's and cross the T's. You can't leave things to assumption, which I think there's more of a tendency to do in a sort of an offline relationship or a face-to-face interaction. So to ensure everyone's on the same page, you have to go much further with the communication. So I think that improves governance. I think it also, thirdly, it puts the focus on distributed teams and hires. So providing you can deal with different time zones, etc., there's far less focus on whether you can get to the same office, or whether you can be in London or Poland or New York. It's all about your capability, your ability to do the job and work effectively with the client, which means that you can, you know, once all this is over and people want to hire much more, you can hire from a much wider pool of talent, I'd say.
So that is, I mean, that is a massive advantage, really. I mean, you know, because I think it's something that the agency world has been sort of struggling with for a long, long time, that, you know, there's so much talent distributed globally and how to pull it all together. And it takes something like a pandemic with everybody in lockdown to suddenly go, well, hang, we can, you know, remotely work with people in, you know, on the west coast of America and in Asia at the same time.
Yeah, it knocks down barriers. I mean, you know, we've been doing this for a while. There's, you know, a couple of big transformation projects we've done, and we've had people working out of four different offices on them. But some clients are less willing to do that. But now, you know, I've just come off a meeting where we've been in five different time zones on the call, you know, you know, admittedly some of them, you know, three different American time zones, so I'm over egging it, but yeah, that would be something that would have been less common, I would have said.
Fantastic. Well, that's you know, that does explain how, you know, some, at least that's one positive that we can get out of it. But I mean, to the actual basics itself of doing this, and I mean, obviously you're quite proficient in this now, but creating a good first impression, as you well know, I mean, that's, you know, that's part of the role of business development, is being able to, you know, to create the right impression first. You know, what tools do we now need, you know, in order to do this thing properly? Because obviously we can't just do it on a, you know, some little tablet somewhere.
Yeah. So I think there's some practical stuff, definitely. You know, having the right and proper bandwidth, as in, you know, broadband, etc., is essential. You know, at the base level for business development, the prospect needs to be able to hear and see you properly. So, that's often, sometimes that's dependent on time and location, because we know that sort of Wi-Fi capabilities go up and down. So I think doing your prep and making sure you're in the best room possible, you've got your Wi-Fi boosters in place, especially where I live. You know, you aren't being disturbed by the kids, and you don't look like the Shroud of Turin, you know, is really, really important. So there's some basics, I think. So I think what I've found is that in general, clients are pretty tolerant around some of those daily life disturbances, you know, much more than they would have been, you know, because they've all got kids, they've got other home commitments too. So a little bit of work life bleed is, you know, is good, because it makes them more human, but I guess not too much. You know, I'm also not a great fan of backgrounds, at least not in a first meeting. I think some people are really dodgy and blend into your face. So I, not everyone agrees with that, but that's my personal preference. And I think, you know, if you're meeting people for the first time, whilst I think we're all moving a bit more casual now since lockdown, I think you need to remain vaguely smart and have, you know, had a wash and shaved, etc. But we can be more casual than before.
No bed hair or anything.
No bed hair. No.
So okay. So look, we've got the right kit. We're all dressed. I mean, at least from the kind of waist up, anyway. And hair is brushed, cut, and we're ready to shine in the first meeting. So, in terms of pitching, I mean, how have things changed now? I mean, has it affected the entire process or just bits of it?
It's affected all of it, I would say, but some more than others. So, you know, I think, as you mentioned right at the front of this, I think it's more difficult now probably to find the unsolicited pitch opportunity. You know, the networking bit is something that is probably still ideally done face to face, but I'm not a BDM or a BDD. They're probably better placed to answer that, but that would be my observation. I think once you've got the lead and it's a live opportunity, I think that process itself, you know, the RFI, the RFP, the pitch presentation negotiation, that seems to have changed not that much, especially the RFI and the RFP bit. You know, there's the internal difficulties around sort of coordinating agency teams to come up with the answer. But if you think the output is normally some longhand answers to a bunch of homework questions, you're largely in familiar territory. I think that the biggest impact for me is that the latter stage is the actual pitch presentation, and then taking the clients through the onboarding process or the final negotiation process. And
right.
That tends to be more face to face, and I think that presents some challenges that need some practical sort of solutions and some thinking.
And it's almost like the way you describe it, it's almost like the beginning and the end of the process. The middle bit sort of pretty much stays the same, that's because that's where you all hunker down and try and come up with the right solutions and stuff. But it's the actual, the engagement parts either at the beginning or the end of the process. I guess that's probably the way to look at it. But I mean, have you actually, given your experiences recently, what unexpected difficulties have you come across?
Well, we try and prep for all eventualities, so I wouldn't say difficulties necessarily unexpected, but sometimes.
Well, what do you plan for then?
Yeah, they're quite difficult. They're still quite difficult to counter. There's many of them. The obvious one's lack of proper time, for presentations. I think, in my experience, that stakeholders don't always realize that these things now take longer in a virtual world. The intros take longer, people turn up late, they have difficulty with the tech, and that eats into the time to talk about the content. So there's a practical thing there. Another one is lack of ability to read the room. So you can't read the faces, you can't work out whether you need to change tack if it's audio only, or they've turned off their screens. And if you're running the presentation and flicking through the slides, you can't read the room especially. So, the best case, you only see a small grid of thumbnails. So that's a big one for me.
Right.
Then you've got the one we talked about earlier on, the poor technology and connection. So attendees can't always hear what's being said, or and that turns them off. Or worse still, the person presenting goes offline at a vital moment. And actually, that's happened to me once in the last 6 months.
At
a key time. And that's incredibly frustrating for all concerned. And it's stressful for the pitch team as well. So
Jeff, hello.
Where have you gone? there's obviously probably a little bit less opportunity and time to include that sort of wow element, the pitch candy, the old fashioned gimmicks that you and I might have done a few years ago when you go into a pitch to engage with people. So I think that's tougher as well.
Yeah. No, that's fine. And obviously, when you talk about pitch candy, you're talking about the kind of the real show busy element of
yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right. So, what about some of the more kind of psychological elements? You and I have both come up through a process where, there is a sort of a questioning technique that you apply to any sales presentations and, handing out visuals and stuff. Do they still apply? Can you still sort of use questioning techniques like that? Or is it just a bit too interrogational?
Yeah, I think it's quite difficult. I think we tend to, we obviously do the insight and analysis when we're doing pitches and come up with solutions, etc. But I think you need to be more visual. So we tend to do, more show and less tell. So
right.
we're far more using, we always did, but we're far more trying to use prototypes. Obviously, if you can do those as videos or clickable prototypes, you can share those with...
This was your straw man technique or whatever, which I thought was quite interesting.
To clients as links or movies after the presentation. And it gives you plenty of flexibility to browse the creative. It gives you something to bounce off. From a Q&A sort of perspective, if you're sort of in the pitch, we never say to a client that they can't ask questions during a presentation. That's a bit rude, but we try and guide them up front that we normally prefer questions at the end now. And we make sure there's specific time boxed out for that, because otherwise it's very easy to overrun and not be able to say all the things you want to say. And we try and choreograph the questions and assign different questions to different individuals. to make
in
sure
real time. So while you're actually, yeah, okay, that's good.
To ensure you sort of maintain that some sort of clarity and stick to those time allocations.
That's quite good. I was in a big multi-person meeting last week, and the format there was very good, because they basically asked you to, because you know the way that everybody thinks these days is like, you know, you've got to say it or you forget it. So they were taking questions live, and you were basically submitting questions throughout the whole presentation. And then there was a 15-minute window at the end of that meeting to go through all those questions, which I thought was quite an efficient way of dealing with it, because, you know, obviously they could then, like you say, field it out to the right people at the right time. It was quite a handy thing to do. But and one of the sort of, I guess, as you sort of said, is that you can control things a little bit more now, and you know you can sort of tilt the table slightly if you need to. Are there? Do you have any kind of tips, basically for keeping a sort of a meeting, you know, sort of online? I mean, are there things that you can do to sort of make sure that you move through? I mean, is it like slides? Because that was always the one thing that was handy with PowerPoint, was the fact that when you're done with that slide, you move on to the next one, and everybody stops talking about what you have been talking about. I mean, are there ways of getting around it that you've sort of discovered?
I mean, you know, we're still using Google Slides, and that's quite, you know, collaborative, because people can co-create on that. But I think at a practical level, you know, this issue around time, you know, sometimes we're pretty upfront. We just ask for more time, at least for intros. So if the pitch is supposed to start at 10 o'clock, we say, can we start at 10 to 10 and do the intros, or can we have an extra 15 minutes? Because it takes 10 minutes of intros, and we're not going to start till 10:15 by the time we've done that. The other thing is, if that's not possible, we avoid doing that horrible round robin thing where everybody says who they are, what their experience is, how long they've lived, you know, all that sort of stuff. Because you have 15 people doing that, it just takes too long. So you basically have one MC doing it, or we do the intros in advance. So obviously, if you had some pre-meets, most people know who they are, perhaps, except for two or three stakeholders, that you just keep the intro to the people that you don't know. We, you know, from, again, practical point of view, we do more rehearsal and time boxing. So we really script and time each section of the presentation. So
wow.
To give you confidence, you can deliver within the time allocation. So more rehearsals than before, more prep to say that each section is then time boxed. We tend to have someone.
It's almost like running a small production, isn't it? It's almost like running a radio or a TV production.
Absolutely. And then, you know, in terms of that reading the room bit, have someone appoint someone in the group who shouldn't necessarily be the person who's running the presentation and doing all the talking to basically, you know, read the room. And if you know, using something like Slack, you have a back channel, so you can actually, you know, message people in terms of, oh, this is running over. We need to say something in less time, or have you mentioned X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, so, don't forget such and such. Yeah.
So there's that as well. And then, you know, that bit with people dropping out, make sure there's a deputy speaker for each section. So it's not just rehearsing your bits and then everyone leaves it to you. Someone else should be able to say your words. So if you've scripted it, they can do that. So you have a number two. And if all else fails, if you record a version of the presentation, there's always a playback afterwards, or you could even play the recorded version if all else fails. But, yeah, there shouldn't be any excuse to get your point across, right?
Here's a version we did earlier.
Like Blue Peter. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, Given what we're all now facing in terms of you know, another sort of 6 months potentially of doing this, I mean, there is going to be some kind of pressure, and I'm sure you've come across it yourself. You know, when clients are sort of still trying to get a face to face because they're missing it, or they're trying to get some sense of normalcy, but it's understandable. But given the you know, obviously, you're dealing with thousands and thousands of pounds sometimes, and people, you know, want to meet with somebody and they want to feel that there's a genuine connection there. I mean, have you found some nice ways to kind of swerve that and to keep the relationship strictly digital?
Well, I'm going to challenge this one. The weird thing is, it may just be the clients that we deal with or the business that we've been doing. There's been very little demand to have a face-to-face meeting. So we may be doing something right or something wrong. I don't know. But there hasn't really been that. And to be honest, I think we wouldn't be against doing it. Provided it's properly socially distanced and it's in the right environment and we've got the office set up, that you could have those meetings if they want to do it. I think we wouldn't be against doing that in the right conditions. So, people out there's listening and they want to have a face-to-face meeting, providing they're not doing it for the sake of it, then we're happy to listen. Yeah.
Go for it. Yeah. Why not? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So a couple of weeks into it and you've landed the job and, you've now obviously you've got the job of delivering sort of on what you've said. And I've already sort of heard some horror stories of nightmarishly long kind of online meetings with teams in, sort of internally, 12 hour long board meetings and stuff. I mean, that can eat into some, huge amounts of profit and goodwill and stuff. Have you found ways to kind of avoid that? I mean, is this just a question of just good management?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, as you quite rightly say, loads of people are on Zoom or the equivalent 10 to 12 hours a day. And quite frankly, no one's got an appetite or bandwidth for whole day workshops anymore.
I mean, you've just done hours, haven't you, today?
Yeah. So you're not going to do any more, and you're in the same situation as well. So, I mean, I think we're quite fortunate in by choice, we tended to try and not do that anyway.
Right.
But as part of our sort of COVID response, we have sort of modified our discovery process and we've tried to chunk the co-creation sessions into shorter interactions. And we have this rule that it's no more than 3 hours. And we've tried, if possible, to have sort of side interviews and have an emphasis on that rather than just doing big showpiece workshops. So that takes more planning and preparation. But I think we've actually ended up with a better product on the back of it and something that's quite differentiated. So we've actually, we've done a few of these now. And one of our new clients recently said that we did a business objectives workshop and she said it was one of the most beneficial, enjoyable she'd attended pre or post lockdown. So it sort of shows you can collaborate and do something just as effectively remotely if you plan it out and you put your mind to it.
I think absolutely. I think we might actually find, if we're honest with ourselves, we might actually realize that all those endless hours that we spent in sort of team meetings and stuff, actually in boardrooms, were pretty much irrelevant because you can do it in half the time, when needs must. So it's probably a good thing. And presumably now, I mean, technology, is playing a big part for you. I mean, not something that you do all the time anyway, but in the delivery and collaboration part of it, I mean, technology must be sort of at the forefront of everything you're doing now.
Definitely. And certainly, in terms of that positive feedback we have, technology was front and center of that. So, the first place I guess that we start is things like virtual collaboration tools. So things like Miro, that helps you almost like replicate the experience of an offline workshop.
How does that work? Remote.
Well, it's like a remote co-creation tool. You basically do your exercises, you've got virtual post-it notes, type experience, you've got virtual like mood boards, and you can co-author with the client in real time, so you can document the answer more quickly, and you can actually see people moving around on the screen. So, some clients don't always like to use it, and they're not so comfortable with it. But so then you have to have a facilitator that's moving their post-its and stuff around for them doing the driving. But in essence, you can replicate all the stuff that you would be doing, and then you have your sort of like your video conferencing tools, like your Zooms, and that's essential for the workshop. So one of the things that we found is that, it's much more difficult to work with big groups remotely. So right. if you've got a large, you know, sort of, let's say, workshop group, let's say more than sort of 6 to 8 people, you know, you need to have a breakout room. So you might have gone into different corners before, but now you have a virtual breakout room to ensure everyone's voice is heard. So basically what you do in Zoom, you can go into different breakout rooms with different facilitators, and you can have in-chat functionality as well. So there may be quieter people. They can actually type their comments as you go along. So, you know, that's all ways in which you can basically replicate an offline workshop. But to do all that, everything has to be much more tightly scripted and coordinated. Right. You probably need more facilitators. Well, you do need more facilitators and co-facilitators to manage the breakout rooms and drive some of those collaboration tools as well. So you can probably, as I say, do as good, if not better, job than you were doing before, but it takes more time and effort to do it.
Right. Okay. That's incredible. I mean, it's almost like we were predestined to be going through this with all the tools that have been developed. You know, it's like suddenly they were there when we needed them. So, yeah, very, very good. But now on to more kind of touchy-feely stuff. I mean, you know, you and I have both gone through the pitching. I must just say, actually, before we go any further, you and I did used to work together at one stage, and we have worked at the same agency. So, and there is a buzz that you get from doing these kind of meetings and having the big high five afterwards and maybe go down the pub for a beer straight out of the meeting and stuff. I mean, now we're all doing it online. I mean, does pitching and onboarding clients virtually, does it still give you the same buzz?
Yes, I think, to a certain extent. I mean,
You're already home for a start. At least you don't have to drive home.
That's true. And I have had a sneaky glass of wine after a pitch, which is an agency tradition. I still get the same pitch buzz and that sort of post-pitch come down, as you call it, you know, I used to get before. So I'd say yes, but I'd say this world is definitely more transactional in terms of the different working sessions. So I think that you have to find time to sort of separate out that off the record stuff with colleagues and clients. And sometimes the best way to do that is perhaps use the good old fashioned methods like phone, so it doesn't feel like it's a scripted session to a certain extent. You know, just using different tech or old tech makes it feel like it's a social thing or an off the record thing rather than being so formal. But I still get the buzz, but it's not the same. Definitely not the same.
All right, so I'm going to put you on the spot. Name one thing that you miss more than anything else about the old ways of doing it.
I think it's like that theatre, the performance, the connection. You know, when you're in a room and you've landed a point and connected with somebody, I don't think you can really sort of replicate that in the virtual world.
You
don't get that same feeling. So I think that's one thing that I would say that I miss and would be happy to go back to.
That's fine. Well, now, as I said, you know, we're old colleagues and or not so old, really. We're just kind of slightly middle aged. But I know you're also extremely talented musically. And because obviously you're a very patient guy, I can imagine you make a great kind of musical teacher to your kids. Any ambitions to become a musical mentor for the children?
Yeah, just projecting my failed career hopes onto my kids. I mean, a couple of them do play. My daughter's got a great voice, actually, and she's been in the National Children's Choir, strange enough, before lockdown. So, I mean, who knows where that might go, but she plays piano and sings, and my son plays piano. But I'm trying not to project my failed musicianship onto them. So I still strum, still play a bit of wailing. I used to go to gigs before lockdown. And still doing the music, but do other things as well. I still like sport. Support a Wolverhampton Wanderers for
American still a Wolves sport. Man, that's great. They're doing not so bad now, aren't they?
Best since I was 13 years old, so at least 2 years ago.
I noticed they did beat Arsenal once, actually, not recently, so that was pretty good.
Yeah. So do that. Still love walking and running, doing a lot of running just to keep fit.
Good.
Clears the mind and it allows me to eat and drink what I want when I want, which is always good.
You know, I think there's a term for that now, isn't there? Which is, was it moral licensing? Which is, you know, the fact that...
I love it.
It's great. There's an actual term that which means that, you know, you've run for 5 miles, so now you can go and eat a Big Mac. You know, there's that kind of moral licensing. I've done this good thing, so now I can do a bad thing.
I love that term. I'm definitely a moral licensist.
That's the way to do it. So obviously you are now, you know, we covered the sort of music side of it and your football. I mean, are there other sort of little hobbies that you've got that you like to relax?
You know, I like, you know, listening to music. I like reading, you know, as I say, getting out and about in the fresh air. I think that's really important during lockdown. So I've got much more into the outdoors than I used to be.
Oh, good. Excellent. Okay, well, we've done all the core bits, and thank you very much for imparting all that fantastic advice. And I did pre-warn you about this as well, that we are in fact putting together edition 2 of the Fuel Podcast mixtape. And because you have a deep love of recorded music, I can't let you go without without giving us a contribution to our Isolation Island disc. So that's what we need. Go ahead, tell us your choice.
Okay, so this was really difficult for me, Keith, as you well know, as we go back a bit. And you also know that I'm a bit of an old hippie and miserablist when it comes to music. So most of my picks probably aren't very uplifting for or mood enhancing for an isolated island. So I'm going to pick something that you can dance and sing along to from one of my favourite bands of the 90s, which is Britpop Masters Pulp. So I was going to go for Common People, but that's pretty too obvious. So let's go with Babies, which was always that my personal request on the dance floor in my younger days at the indie disco.
Beautiful track as well, and one of their most poppy as well, isn't it?
Yeah,
I gave it a listen the other day actually, and I thought you forget how different it is from the rest of their catalogue, I just don't know what it is about Jarvis Cocker and his ability to kind of nail your kind of inner voice, you know, that all those things that you think but you can't express, and that's a fantastic song. I'd never realised about voyeurism and being a teenager, so that's a great track. Yeah,
great lyrics. What about you? You got a favourite?
I've already got my sort of one in for this first edition, which is I guess I could do one for every version that we do, but this time around I picked Diamond Dogs from David Bowie, because that takes me back to about the same age group that Jarvis Cocker was on there. I was being a sort of a young teenager and wanting to live that kind of George Orwellian sort of post-apocalyptic lifestyle, but pretty good. So okay, so now we've spoken, you did touch on backgrounds and stuff for video calls, and we are putting together a virtual bookshelf to go behind people, and if they listen to other episodes of Fuel, they can pick out some wonderful tomes to stack behind them while they're talking. And what's your book recommendation?
Okay, so I've been naughty here, and I did sort of pre get authorization from you.
Yes,
to do this, and I'm going with two.
All right.
One that I've just finished myself, and then one that I grew up with, and I've just been reading with my kids. Actually, the two youngest now, my eldest daughter before. So, in terms of stuff I've been reading for myself, it's a four book cycle, and it's called The Cemetery of Forgotten Books, and it's by
now, I'm fascinated by this. Go on, who's it by?
By Carlos Ruiz Zafón. Now, you may know he's Spanish. You might know him as the guy who wrote Shadow of the Wind, which was like an international bestseller, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
And that was the first book in the cycle, but he's since written three others, and they're all linked together. And they're all about Barcelona during and after the Spanish Revolution. And the books are almost sort of Dickensian to a certain extent. They're very large than life. They've got some great characters. They were funny and sad, But they're absolute page turners as well. And it's about an interesting part of history and very atmospheric in terms of that Barcelona setting. So, yeah, I can't recommend them highly enough, really. They're, I've got through them, the last three, in literally like sort of 10 or 15 minutes.
Well, I should get myself a copy of that. You say there's four books in there, right?
Yeah, there's four books altogether. Yeah.
Lovely.
Yeah. But you can read them individually as well, and start with The Shadow of the Winds, and then move on to others.
Lovely. Okay. Yeah. And so, what was your second one then?
Well, the second one was good old Lord of the Rings. So,
another series.
Yeah. So I've now read that about five or six times since I was 12, both to myself and, I say now, to my children. I'm just about halfway through with my twins, and so I know they're going to stand the test of time on a desert island.
You're expecting them to be there for some time, then?
Exactly. Well, I know lots of people are going to write them off as some, a sad fantasy tale, but if you read them, if you have read them, actually they're about friendship and loyalty and overcoming self-doubt, and also how small acts of bravery and defiance by everyday people sometimes can change the world and have a positive impact. So I think they're really good lessons to keep in mind at the moment.
Fantastic. Well, that's nice to know. So yeah, for that you're definitely going on the bookshelf. And my standard joke whenever anybody ever says Lord of the Rings is that Tolkien's a very hard hobbit to break. But so anyway, what's coming up now for ORM now?
We are continuing to work on pictures and presentations. I obviously can't tell you what we're working on, but we've got a couple of big things on at the moment, so I'm heavily involved in that. And in terms of other events and activities, this is quite a busy week. I'm actually doing a webinar, or rather sort of it's going to be recorded video tomorrow around sort of digital transformation in asset and wealth management. So that's tomorrow afternoon, and that will probably be on the ORM and Paragon. It's a holding company sort of channels,
right,
I guess, in the next few weeks. So a bit of a busy time coming up for me.
Wow. Well, that's good to hear. Yeah. Well, Andy, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing that information. I hope it's going to be really useful for people, because I know there's a lot of confusion about how to, how these things are now done, and uncertainty about how to move forward. So hopefully your advice is going to be taken on board. And I do appreciate you doing it. It's very useful stuff. And given the way that our entire business paradigm has now shifted, it's going to be very useful. So thank you very much, Andy. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Keith. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thanks to the team at ORM. Stay safe, live long and prosper, as they say. And I'll see you soon, Andy.
Cheers. Take care.
And we're going to leave it there with Andy for now, but I'm sure we'll find another excuse to tug on his coattails soon. Best of luck to Andy and all the team at ORM, and thank you for providing our listeners with some great insight. And it's you, our listeners, who are giving us encouragement every week as our show grows and grows. Without you, we wouldn't have a show, and we really appreciate all the positive feedback you provide. If you want to write to us, drop us a line via the website at www.thefuelpodcast.com. We read every email and we promise to get back to you. My thanks also to my co-producer Donna and our in-house band The Prospectors. That's St. Matthew, Barney, Memory Banks, and all IT functionality has been provided by the team at Queegee Bow Design in downtown Indianapolis. So join us next time on The Fuel, the new business podcast sponsored by The Advertist, the new business development platform, when we'll be serving up another nourishing gourmet course of sales wisdom, as well as a healthy dose of insight for the new business curious. And really, shouldn't that include you?